Welcome back to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio, as usual, is my co-host, Dr. Les Olalot, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College. And Doc, we've been having a very interesting discussion together in the last number of broadcasts around the big idea of biblical leadership, but really kind of looking at a very, very important and practical side of that in terms of how do we, as leaders, people who have influence over the lives of others, parents, Sunday school teachers, how do we deal with the fact that people who we are responsible for, and sometimes even our own lives, run up against policies, or as my son likes to say, dumb rules? How do we deal with those? Why are they there?
Well, we will address only institutional.
Right.
We also, in another series of broadcasts, will be dealing with differences, where Paul goes down to individual policies that he imposed on himself for the bigger cause.
And that's important because most of us have to deal with those institutional policies, whether our children are in a Christian school or our kids go to a youth group that has certain policies in play. How do you deal with those institutional policies when sometimes your child comes home and thinks that they're a Bible standard?
Well, we will look at institutional policy in two categories. One would be absolute policy, and the other would be relative policies. An absolute is something that can stand alone. It needs nothing else to give it meaning. God's word is absolute. God is absolute.
Mm-hmm. What would be some examples in your mind of a biblical absolute that we would have in play as an institution?
Well, there's a listing of 10 in the Old Testament that's a good beginning.
I kind of asked for that, didn't I?
Yeah. And so when you look at that listing of 10, we call the Ten Commandments.
Sure.
I've been 42 years in ministry and never have I had a person come in, whether it's while I pastored a youth ministry or on the road in revivals or these years at college, never had anybody come in and argue about an absolute. I've never had a student come in and say, what is this, thou shalt not kill? You mean I can't kill a roommate?
Although I'm sure they felt that way
obviously
before.
Obviously, where you came from, we handle things differently. No, nobody ever said that. Or, what's this rule you can't steal? How do you think I'm going to get through college? Some may have thought that, but have not. I mean, that has never come up. That is not where you get your
arguments. Nobody argues about those.
Nobody argues because you have chapter verse. There are a lot of guidelines you could go very clearly that would be
well, for example,
absolutes.
For example, in a Christian school, how do you defend something like a certain dress policy, certain kind of dress policy? Maybe the school has a rule that you can't wear jeans to school or to class.
Well, I think that comes under relative policy. Now, an absolute, by definition, can stand alone. It needs nothing else to give it meaning. It is always true.
Okay.
No matter what the setting, it's always true. But there is also institutional policies that are relative. They are true in relationship to something else. That is, they are true in relationship to the function of that institution. We have determined our mission, and for that mission to happen, we know we have to protect doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
For that mission to happen, we have to put policies in place that are going to help us down the road to that purpose.
Right.
And those relative policies are true in relationship to something else. Now, we get in big trouble, and we lose credibility
right.
if we try to make an absolute out of an institutional relative. That is, we try to make an external standard equal godliness, or we try to make an external standard equal the same level as thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal.
And then what happens is the person under that standard not only rejects the relative, but they throw out the absolute as well at times.
Well, when they get thinking about it, they said, how can this be?
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot equate this wearing jeans, or you cannot equate hair length, or you cannot equate that with a doctrine, or you cannot equate that with a clear-cut command, don't steal, don't commit adultery, etc.
Although I've heard you make a pretty good argument for the denim being a biblical absolute.
Yeah, it's amazing and how our institutions, how our Christian institutions, our dean's office stay in touch during the summer. How are you handling denim this year? It's kind of comical, but yet, believe it or not, you have crushed denim and shotgun denim and Clorox denim and
ripped denim
and chainsaw denim, and so it's not just as simple as denim, but I say, here's the kids thinking, a whole tribe of Levi, we can't wear them. But when you look at the, of course, I tease and do the etymology, I put that as an absolute, because you look at devil, D-E-V-I-L-D-E-M-O-N-D-E-N-I-M. So the etymology almost
it's got to be in there somewhere. It's in the Hebrew for sure.
But this is where a lot of confusion enters in, and it causes a lot of hurt and confusion, in many cases mistrust, because we put these institutional relative policies in place, and they are ultimately for the fulfillment of the mission that we have. The guidelines are there. I remember one student years ago came into my office with the handbook, said, "These are man-made rules." I said, "Of course. This is a man-run institution. How else are we going to run this place?"
That's a great answer.
And, of course, these are man-made rules. But they are not equated with doctrinal truth. But they are simply, because God is a God of order, God is not a God of confusion, He then expects us to operate and to function within the realm of orderliness. And to have orderliness, then there needs to be application of these policies.
And some of these we would not impose in other contexts.
No. Many of the institutional rules you would not impose in other contexts. For example, signing off campus.
Right.
Where do you find that in the Scripture? Maybe that's why so many died when Jericho walls were going down.
The sign-out line was so long
and everybody got crushed. No, but so then we say, okay, God is a God of order, and we will support that probably in more detail when we do the next broadcast on this, because we will make very clear the Bible principles that are applicable.
That tell us how to come up with these
policies. That tell us how to come up with that. I did a pastor's meeting a while back. And a pastor came up during the break, and he said, "Why do we need rules under grace?" And I said, "How many children do you have?" And he said, "Well, my wife is pregnant with our first." I said, "Well, could you come back in 15 years and ask that question? And I want to see how the grace thing worked."
Right.
You have no policy for your children. So consequently, you as a parent then would not feel you could impose a bedtime that is not chapter and verse. You would not feel imposed to do homework.
Right.
I said, let me know how that works out in 15 years.
We'd be in trouble.
And I said, obviously, Paul was not saved long enough to understand the whole concept of grace, because he said, if you desire the office of a bishop, you desire good work, and then policy, 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 policy. Deacons, you want to be a deacon, policy, policy, policy. Paul set no guidelines for spectators. But when you left the stands from being a spectator to a participator, then Paul said there are guidelines.
Yes, right.
I don't think there's a violation of grace at all. I think it is protective of the mission, because it protects the image of the glory of God. It protects the whole purpose. And even though these guidelines are given, that there are things that are necessary.
I know in the next broadcast you're going to tell us how we come up with these policies, but maybe this would be a good place to answer this question. How do we live within those restraints? Because sometimes living within those restraints is very difficult.
Well, I've discovered this, that when I impose on myself a greater restraint than man does, I'm never pressured by man's standard. For example, when I went to college, there was an 8 or 7:50 wake-up bell. And someone asked me during Christmas break after my first semester, "How can you live with all those rules?" And I said, "Which ones?" And they started naming things. I said, "You know, the school has a standard of 7:50. My standard was 5:30. I headed up to the prayer room at 5:30 in the morning. So I was really so far away from that standard that I was not
even
aware of it.
Yeah.
Never aware of it. And there were policies. For example, if dad says, "Son, you can take the car Friday night, but you have to be home at 9 o'clock. The son comes home at 9:15. He is pressured by dad's standard because he has exceeded that standard. And all of us parents know that 15 minutes is like an eternity when a kid first gets his driver's license, because we hear a siren and we already build a case he's gone. And reality is he was just finishing a burger at McDonald's and enjoying his freedom and just didn't think. Well, he could come in at 8:59 with 2 seconds left, dash from the car and land in the living room. He's still pressured by dad's standard because he could have tripped. So he says, "Dad wants me home at 9. My standard is 8:45, not pressured by dad's standard, because he moved away from that standard.
In fact, he shocked dad probably.
Now, let's suppose that you were to come in the gymnasium, see me working out, and I'm right up against the wall, and back of my head is bleeding, my arms and elbows are bleeding. And you say, Les, how are you? I said, horrible. I hate walls. And you say, what? I said, look at what it's doing to me. And you, being an expert athlete, would say, you know what I learned years ago? When you get in the middle of the gym floor, the further you get away from that wall, the less you're pressured by the wall. And I can't believe, fourth as old as the United States, and it never registered. And I've been fighting walls all my life. As soon as I moved away from the wall, I began to appreciate the fact that it's holding the roof up.
Yeah.
Well, when we look at this picture, there are walls, about seven walls. One is society's wall.
Okay.
Not much pressure at all, because normally that's represented by 55 and 70, called speed limit. Then there is the wall of peers. Peers put a certain amount of pressure, but we take it or leave it. Then there's the church. The church can preach tithing, preach obedience, but people take it or leave it. The pressure begins to be felt when a parent sees a junior high student, says, I've got to get him enrolled in a Christian school. And this child, who has to this point not known much restraint,
not many walls,
is introduced to a thing called a handbook. And in this handbook, there are policies to which he is introduced.
With no chapter and verse.
With no chapter, some, many with no chapter and verse. But this is how we're going to run this institution. Suddenly he feels squeezed. The parents oftentimes begin to feel squeezed because, as we mentioned, they go shopping, get all these clothes at a good deal, and find out half of them can't be worn that were purchased.
Right.
And then,
now dad and mom feel the wall.
Yeah, and from the school, then there's the parent wall. The parents, I don't care what the school may allow, you're not going to do that here. And then the next wall inside from the parent is the self wall. And that's where Paul lived. Paul says, I die daily. He identified with the cross. And the biggest thing that we fight in policy is that we are so alive unto ourselves, we will not submit. Even if it's for the bigger cause, we will not submit, because we will fight for our own rights rather than dying to ourselves. We will fight for our own rights. And the people who go on to God's glory to fulfill the mission for God's glory and for others' good are those who are dying to themselves to be alive unto Christ. Paul says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ that liveth in me.
So dying to self is the key to living within God-given restraints.
Ultimately, it is.
And as we get ready for that next broadcast and then this one, I want to just let you, the listener, know that we do have a resource that might be helpful to you if this has been something that has stirred your thinking. We do have a video series and an audio series entitled Learning to Live with God-Given Restraints. And you can order a copy of that through the Word for Life website, and we would be more than happy to get that information to you in the Biblical Leadership Series. Until the next time that we're together, may the Lord bless you.